This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Shattered Lives, the Irish Daily Star and Irish Mirror's crime podcast. I'm Paul Healy. I am crime correspondent for both papers and I'm joined as ever by Michael O'Toole. He is our crime and defence editor. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Paul. How are you?
Good. We're getting back into the swing of things, doing our Monday pods. Although I do see that someone did complain on social media that we're not doing enough of them. I wish we had the time, let alone the energy or the brain power to come up with a pod every day, and fair play to those who do. But
I think we're sadly lacking in all three, Paul, really.
Yes. Well, we like to come on when we have things to discuss and also when we have the time to do so. Forgive us, dear listeners, but we are doing the day job as well and doing our best to do that job. But we also love doing the pod. So when we can do it, we can do it. We try to do it every week. At least once a week, maybe twice a week. The aim is Monday, Tuesday or Thursday. So that's the plan going forward if anybody is curious.
And just to stress, you're quite right. It's a labour of love. It's a new sort of journalism for us because I'm very old. The journalism is always very linear. So for me, I got my story and put it in the paper. So this interweb thing has been fantastic. Just not even for this, but things like Twitter and putting our stories up online. So it's really new for us, but it's not our day job, but it's a great hobby, shall we say.
Yes, well, a hobby we still do as part of our day job and get paid for it, to be fair, but we like it. So, we're going to discuss the Court of Feud and the latest in relation to it. There have been developments. We only hear, as we were saying in the previous pod, we're lucky if we hear 10% of what goes on. And really, in the last week, the question on every journalist covering this mind is, what's the story with the funerals? Because, you know, at this stage, look, both men have been deceased for quite some time. Obviously, Tristan Sherry was killed in Brown's Steakhouse there in Blanchardstown, West Dublin, on the 23rd. The 24th, Christmas Eve. So it's all over 3 weeks at this stage. Since he has been killed, and yet we were curious as to why there was no funeral. So our understanding was that there was a second post-mortem done on Mr. Sherry, an independent post-mortem, so a family can request that. There's various different circumstances as to why another post-mortem might be completed, but there's also lots of other factors here that maybe we don't have the full story on. There are security concerns around these funerals, more so than maybe ever before, that in recent times I've heard of, other than outside of the Kinnan and Hutch feud, serious security concerns, in particular about the funeral of Tristan Sherry. So, Mick, you had a story today. You have learned, and indeed we all now have heard, it confirmed that the funeral of Tristan Sherry is the one that's going to take place first, and that's taking place tomorrow.
Yes, and that's going to be in Finglas. He was from Finglas originally, and I think it's about 11:30 tomorrow morning. That would be Tuesday, depending on when this goes out. Yes. So Tuesday morning, 11:30. It is very strange. So it's more, as you say, it's more than 3 weeks since Mr. Sherry died in that incident in State Brown's Steakhouse, and four people are charged with this. So we'll have to be very careful, but he was the victim of a homicide, so that's fine. So I can't really remember a body being so, waiting so long for a body to be released for a funeral. So there's obviously things, and as you say, Paul, we don't really know. We did believe I think there was some suggestion or there's some strong belief that it was going to be last week, but for whatever reason, things do happen. And, you know, sometimes we're housed by our own petard, I suppose, that we write things and we think we're right, and then events change and the paper doesn't. But that's just the way it goes. It's happening. But so over the weekend, I was doing some research into this, and I did get a sniff that Gardaí would have expected Mr. Sherry's funeral to take place on Tuesday. Now, just as a small aside, on Sunday night, I then got information to say it could be happening today. So we sort of had to change the paper. But then at about 11:30, I got information, no, I think it's going to be on Tuesday. So I had to go back to plan A. But that's just the nature of our job. You know, you just have to go with whatever you have. So we had Tuesday, brought it back to Monday, and then I think we finalised it for Tuesday. And I think we were proved correct on that. So that's going to be on Tuesday. We can talk about the security in a while. Jason Hennessy, who was the man who was shot and subsequently died in that incident, he hasn't been buried either. So he died, it was the 4th of January that he died, wasn't it? It was the Thursday the 4th.
Nearly 2 weeks now, yeah.
Yes, and so he had been in Connolly Hospital. They had been expecting Mr. Hennessy to survive, but his condition did deteriorate. He was moved to the Mater, and he sadly lost his life there. So my understanding is that Gardaí are planning for that funeral being at the end of this week. Now, by that, I mean it could be Friday, it could be Saturday. The wake could be on Thursday, and if that is the case, then the funeral will be on Friday. Or the wake could be on Friday, and if that is the case, then it will be on Saturday. But I'd be pretty happy at this stage that both men's funeral masses and burials will have taken place by the end of this week. And as I say, it's quite a long time.
Yeah, and people might be asking the question, well, why are we, and it almost seems a bit ghoulish, why are we focusing so much on the funerals of these individuals? Well, it's really because of, and this is where the crime story comes in, because of the security concerns involved in these funerals and the amount of resources that has to go into the policing of the funeral itself and the aftermath of the funeral. And like that is what makes this, I suppose, a legitimate story. It's not that we're necessarily interested in covering, although it will be, I'm sure, well covered, the funeral of Tristan Sherry. It's that, look, there are concerns, genuine concerns, about the security around this funeral because of the individuals we're speaking about. And that would be associates of the late Jason Hennessy Sr., some of whom are considered to be very, very dangerous individuals, criminals who are well known to Gardaí. And they're, as we've said before on this pod, they're very volatile and unpredictable individuals. And as a result of that, Gardaí have to prepare themselves for all eventualities. So I was actually up at the church there in Finglas earlier today. There were lots of reporters floating about. Look, just trying to get a feel for the area and that. And you can see that there is an obvious and open Garda presence there already in the heart of Finglas. So they are preparing for, as I said, all eventualities. And we saw an actual search team openly there around the funeral home and basically doing a sweep of the premises to ensure that there is no obvious threat around the building. So that shows you the scope of this, that there are, I mean, it's not like they're hiding this. They are doing everything they can to make sure that everything goes off without a hitch.
I think they are worried, and I think there would be intelligence or evidence of a threat against property and the person herself, a lady who would be an associate of Mr. Sherry. So I think that threat has been taken very seriously. And, you know, we do have to stress there are associates of the late Jason Hennessy who are extremely unpredictable and volatile. So we just don't know what they're going to do. And I think Gardaí, as you say, they have to hope for the best, but prepare for the worst. So, you know, I think there'll definitely be a major security operation for the Sherry funeral. But then, you know, the other scenario is that the associates might wait until after Mr. Hennessy is buried before trying to do something. So it's a sort of a week-long headache, and it will continue after that because, as I say, they're very, very volatile people.
Yeah, and as you've just mentioned there, and we'll be running a story on that, and again, it shows the reality of this, that is an innocent woman who... very credible threat surrounds her. You know, that's the scary reality of this. It's not like we're just talking about gangsters going after gangsters here. There are innocent people associated on both sides who are caught up in this, and you've been told from your sources that this person, that she is in danger.
Yeah, it's a credible threat, and not only against her, but also against her property. So, yeah, look, I think it is fair to say that Gardaí are extremely worried about what could happen either this week or later on. You know, I do think there are going to be consequences about what happened in that diner that night that will probably go on for quite some time.
And then in terms of the investigation into that, I mean, obviously we had to be careful in relation to the death of Mr. Sherry, because you said there's four people charged in relation to that. But the death of Jason Hennessy is a separate murder investigation, and it's a fluid one. Where do we think that lies now?
There's two things, and they're both been taken very, very seriously. We know that the hit team was a two-person team. So it was Tristan Sherry who went in to the restaurant with a machine pistol. And then there was another man, an unsub, the Americans would say, who didn't get to fire off any shots, we don't think, panicked when Jason Hennessy bravely confronted Sherry. And then Mr. Sherry was shot, or Mr. Hennessy was shot. And then what happened after that is now subject of a court case. But that's the second killer, because it is Mr. Hennessy is dead. It's a murder inquiry. So the second person was part of a hit team and is part of a murder team. So that person is being investigated for the murder of Mr. Hennessy. So the guards are basically trying to find that person. Now, here's the other thing. I wonder, was there a third person? Was there a getaway driver? Or did the second person, was he the getaway driver? I would suspect it was a two-man hit team and a getaway driver. So there's probably three people who were involved in that attempted murder and the murder of Mr. Hennessy. So the guards are, obviously Tristan Sherry's dead, but the other person or persons are out there, and the guards are absolutely 100% looking for them. The other issue, which is just as troubling for the guards, is we know that when Tristan Sherry was tackled, someone took the machine pistol off him, and the machine pistol was not in that restaurant. And that's a very, very, very dangerous piece of kit. And the guards are looking for that.
Yes, and last week a teenage, 18-year-old boy, man, 18 years, very young, was arrested on suspicion of concealing that weapon, had been released without charge. So there's a file gone to the director of public prosecutions over that, and I think that there are expected to be further arrests in relation to that, but the guards haven't found that gun, but they have strong suspicions as to who may be responsible for taking it out of the restaurant that night and indeed hiding it.
Can I just mention one thing? You mentioned funerals. Look, it is a distasteful aspect of what we do. I defend it. I think it's part of journalism and it's part of what we do. Some people might find it distasteful. That's no problem. It's a job that we have to do. I've done more than enough gangland funerals. Some people do get vexed at it. Most people, I think, are very, very dignified. And we try and maintain a low-key presence. In my mind, we try and leave as small a footprint as possible. But, I think there is a public interest in this, and I will defend that. Others can disagree, that's fine. But I will tell you, in 2006, you met a lady called Baiba Salite was murdered in North Dublin. She's from Latvia. And Jim Walpole, who was our photographer at the time, and I went over for that funeral. Sarah McInerney was there. She's now an RT. She was working for the Sunday Tribune. Remember, she was there. There were six or seven Irish journalists at it, because it was a big story, because it was a massive investigation and massive story at the time. But the interesting aspect is the family welcomed us into the church, and they actually filmed it themselves. So there's a tradition over there, and the casket was open. So they brought us in, they let us take pictures in the church, and they filmed it themselves. So I suppose every country really is different, but that was the Latvian way.
Yeah, and just in terms of gangland funerals, I suppose they are at times often an opportunity for, we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, but an opportunity for, a reflection on, there's a religious aspect, we've experienced this where the local priest has used the homily to call for peace and to call out the violence that's going on. So that is obviously of interest to us reporters as well, to report that and to broadcast that. And they say that often knowing that it's going to be broadcast. So that's why it's important to cover these things as well.
Yeah, and it's a human being's death. And for me, it's a I mean, the first funerals I did was during at the end of the Troubles up north, and there was probably a slightly, because there were so, there'd been so many, I think there was probably a more accepting view of media funerals up there, because they were just so, like, for example, the priest would bring you in, you'd probably be brought over to the side room, you could listen to the homily and all that sort of stuff, and you know, so, you know, there, obviously there was a lot of, there were a lot of gun murders during the Troubles and killings, so I just find that different when I came down here. But look, it is, look, it's not the best part of our job, let's be honest, but it's a story that we have to do.
Yeah, and also, I mean, you learn things from covering these funerals. I mean, I don't know if it's quite on the same scale, but I often recall the funeral of David Byrne. And I mean, that was obviously a high profile gangland funeral with individuals from the actual Kinahan cartel, many of whom we didn't know the identity of or exactly what they looked like. And from an intelligence point of view, not just from the guards, but from us as journalists, we were able to identify who was at that funeral and isolate in our heads who these individuals were. And so from that perspective, it can also be fruitful as well. Just on the subject of, I want to move on from the incident in Browns, but we said on the pod last week that this might be going in the direction of it being a personal dispute with Tristan Sherry, but as you've mentioned, there could be two or three other people involved in this. And as I said, this situation is fluid. And while we might hear one thing one week, we could hear the direct opposite. That doesn't mean we're wrong. It's just we're not privy to all of the information, as we've said. And I think that we are getting a sense that this has the potential to become a wider conflict because of the other individuals that might have been involved that night.
We're not part of the investigation team. We're not in the incident room. We don't hear the intelligence. We don't hear all the stuff that's given. So, you know, we do rely on scraps. And, you know, someday at the start, they could have said ex-criminal was involved and then they ruled that person out. And then they could say at the start, ex-person was involved and then suddenly ex-person does come into it. I mean, they're dynamic. And they're fluid. So, you know, we often only get, as I say, the scraps. So we'll see where it goes. But look, I think they were looking very much that this was driven by Tristan Sherry, but maybe somebody put him up to it. Maybe somebody paid him. We just don't know.
Yeah, but also, you know, we're not privy to what the gangsters think and what and what their suspicions may be. If you think back to the Kinahan-Hutch feud, I mean, the Kinahans identified people that they believed were involved and then they targeted them. Rightly or wrongly, you know, there were people murdered in the Kinahan-Hutch feud. An example I can think of is Michael Barr. I mean, Michael Barr was targeted, shot dead in the Sunset House because they believed he was directly involved in the Regency Hotel incident. You know, they're not guards, they're not investigators. They just believed he was involved and they took him out as a result of it.
And then there was a man called Darren Cairns, who was a friend of Dahi Douglas. And the Kinahans, I know the Kinahans targeted both. Darren Cairns was murdered, Dahi Douglas, in November 2015. Dahi Douglas, it was after the attempt on Daniel Kinahan at the Red Cow Hotel. I think a day later, Dahi Douglas was walking his dog in Cabaret and was shot and survived. In New Year's Eve 2015 and into 2016, they shot Darren Cairns. The Kinahans shot Darren Cairns in a pub in North Dublin. And then in July 2016, they got Dahi Douglas again. And I can tell you, Foursquare, those men were killed because the Kinahans believed they were involved in the murder attempt on Daniel Kinahan. And they weren't. The guards heard this intelligence and they knew that they were in a pub. I think there was a bit of a schmozzle or something. And they had them in a pub at a certain time. And they couldn't have got to the Red Cow because this was over. It was Northside somewhere. Bicabra, somewhere like that. And they couldn't have got there in time. But that doesn't matter. You know, the Kinahans just did it because that's what they thought. They're not police officers. They don't have to worry about rules or anything like that. So yeah, it's entirely chaotic.
Yeah, they don't wait. They don't care. If they think someone's involved, they're just going to, yeah, you know, and that's, I think, probably a fear here as well. Just on West Dublin, you covered a court appearance there on Friday in relation to a firearm seizure in Finglas back in 2022. So two brothers were up in court.
Yeah, Glenn Ward is 30 and Eric O'Driscoll, his younger brother, is 22. And they both appeared in Dublin District Court on Friday afternoon and we were all there for it. Glenn Ward is charged with two offences, possessing a firearm and recklessly discharging a firearm. Mr. O'Driscoll is charged with other firearms offences as well, including discharging a firearm, possessing the two firearms, and possessing ammunition. So they were remanded in custody. Now, there was an interesting aspect of this, and obviously it's sub judice, but it was an interesting aspect that there was a defence request. Niall O'Connor, who was the solicitor, said that he requested that the judge ask the media not to disclose the prison. There was no bail application, so they were remanded in custody with consent. The judge, Mr. O'Connor, asked the judge not to ask us not to publicise the prison the next time there's a court case or the location of the next court case. So the judge said she was going to go with this, and she said, unless anybody wants to, she said, I'm aware that there are members of the media here, so unless anybody wants to address me. So I was sitting beside Reynolds, so I volunteered Reynolds. So Reynolds, he's a senior man, he stood up and he said, well, I'm just wondering, judge, is there any legislative basis for this? And the judge was given an answer, and I elbowed him and I said, Paul, ask, is it an order or a request? And he went, judge, is it an order or a request? And the judge said, it's a recommendation. So I don't think any media could really turn that down if a judge asks you, because Mr. O'Connor did say that there are serious concerns and that the Gardaí are aware of these serious concerns about both men. So they have been remanded in custody and they will be appearing again in the coming weeks. But we won't be saying where. Or when.
That's the great Paul Reynolds of RTE that you're referring to, by the way, just in case people haven't caught that. Yeah, who gets mercilessly volunteered to do the heavy lifting at times.
Well, you know, I always think, look, Reynolds, he's the face of crime journalism in Ireland, in my opinion, right? You and I, people might know what we look like, and have you ever been in the Jacks and somebody goes up to you and said, Paul Healy?
No, thankfully not, Mick, no.
It happened to me once, and you do get on guard, you know. But I think you and I could largely walk down the street and we're grand. Whereas Paul, once you're an RT, you're famous. So really there were seven or eight journalists there, but the only one that really mattered was Paul, because everybody knows who he is and what he looks like, because he speaks to the nation every day. So he's our spokesman. So, you know, he gets all the benefits of being the RT man, so he can take the responsibility.
I'm sure he'd.
Plus, I like telling him what to do. I like ordering him about.
That's as much as we can say about that case, because I just want to explain this to people that, I mean, most people do get it, but social media sometimes would make you think that people don't get it. But I mean, some people have genuinely asked, you know, why haven't you said this and that and whatever? When something is, you mentioned the phrase sub judice, but even that might confuse some people. When something is before the court, you got to stick to what's said in the courts, unless it's the special criminal court. So you have literally just given a beat for beat court report there. The full details will come out if and when it goes to trial. You got to leave it at that.
Can I give you a perfect example, Paul? And I'm going to bring you in this. During the Aisling Murphy trial, the amount of disinformation that was doing the rounds about, it was effectively that the conspiracy was the Gardaí and the government were conspiring with media to keep out the fact that Aisling Murphy had been stabbed. Do you remember all that? Now, I don't know, you were up to your tonsils. It used to infuriate me reading all this stuff on TikTok and Twitter and everything. That wasn't the case. I mean, as I said, on the week of her murder, we had that she had been stabbed and that they were looking for her, the murder weapon. I am not responsible for the other media. If they don't have this, if their sources didn't tell them this, that's their problem. But we had that. But there was just, I just loved the way, I think it was because Joseph Pusco was a foreigner. They sort of were saying that we were trying to batten this down for some reason. And I didn't really understand it. It's never that complex. It's always simple. The media that had it wrote about it. In other words, we knew about it. The media that didn't have it didn't know about it. And Sinné, that happens. But there's no massive conspiracy.
But also, if you recall from the trial, you know, there were a certain amount of witnesses that saw the full extent of Aisling Murphy's injuries. And in those early days, I would say a small pool of people really knew the full extent of what she had suffered. Mm. And when people bring up the strangulation factor, I just want to point out that Dr. Sally Ann Collis, the state pathologist, she did actually say, and she did examine whether there was a possibility that she might have suffered strangulation. She wasn't able to rule that out entirely. Now, obviously, the 11 stab wounds were the cause of death. Mm. God, if only we were privy to such level of detail 24 hours into a murder investigation. We're not always. Sometimes our sources are very good. Sometimes they're not. Sometimes investigations are kept tight. Sometimes They're not. There's no grand conspiracy. Yeah, you're right. And it's frustrating to see the rise of that kind of talk. Again, it's social media to blame that there is some sort of grand conspiracy between government and Gardaí and media. And I got to be careful here because there are matters before the courts, but everybody knows about that horrific, terrible incident in Parnell Square before Christmas when that poor child was egregiously injured. The last thing any journalist wanted to do was to cover up and hide and conceal the facts of that. In fact, every single day, you and I, and I'm sure every other journalist in the country that was working on it, was scavenging to get as much information as possible. And some of the information was being kept tight for obvious reasons, because matters were completely inflamed at the time, as we know. You know, the riots. So, look, we fought to get as much information as we could. I just want to point out, sorry, that on that, you know, kudos to, not that they needed to and not that they should have needed to, but to that child's mother and father who ultimately made the call, whether they were advised or not, to put out updates on the GoFundMe and to tell people how their daughter was doing. And that was their own right. But it wasn't the right of media to get into the medical facts as to how that child is doing every single day. There was no grand conspiracy, no cover-up.
Yeah, so as I always lecture you guys, Occam's razor, it's one of the things that I live by in life. In other words, the simple answer is usually the right answer. So if the media didn't publicise something, I'd say it's probably because we didn't have it. Why would we, Nick O'Toole or Paul Healey from The Star in the Mirror, do you think the government even knows who we are? Really?
No.
You know, we're not exactly, you know what I'm saying? We don't move in the, we don't go. I was in government buildings once this year for the budget briefings, and God, it was great because they were all having coffee and tea and cakes and everything. Oh, this is a bit of a life. It's not my world. I don't move in that world. We are street beat reporters. We don't hobnob with these people. Are they going to ring us up and say, Michael, please leave that out? It's just nonsense. So I'm getting tired, really, and I'm sure you're getting them. The messages, the mentions and all on Twitter and everything, just let us do our job. We have what we can, we print what we can. There's no interest in us holding stuff back.
This is something kind of I've given out about today, because once again found ourselves and myself here trying to find out the truth about a particular story that spread on social media and on WhatsApp. For some reason, when something gets sent to you in WhatsApp, you kind of think there's some sort of legitimacy to it, because someone has sent it to you in a text, but it's a text that's been forwarded and forwarded and forwarded. So this was, I'm not going to say beat for beat what it was, because it is, I think, a little bit harmful, but it was a rumor about the death of an Irish celebrity and in very tragic circumstances. And so we obviously had to go and check that out, and it's complete bullshit. Of course, it's not true. But that didn't stop it spreading, and I'm beginning to kind of lose it with the amount of times that we are now spent trying to fight this misinformation and disinformation that spreads. It's crazy. That's become our job nearly.
Well, yeah, there's two aspects to that. I do worry about misinformation and disinformation. So, but I do want to draw a difference between, I think it's really important that people tell us things.
Yep.
No matter how outlandish it could be, you tell me and I'll check it out.
Check.
And if I can... Yeah. Right. So I would not want people not to tell us things. Just fart. And I don't mind. Send me 20 things in a day if you want me to check them out. No problem. But don't be coming at me with, Michael, you're a World Economic Forum or New World Order stooge and you're all part of it. It's just bollocks. Right.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? So I think there's a difference there. But you're quite right. I mean, that one today, how can I put this? You know, the person was named, and that was egregious. Mm. That was really, really egregious. So, but you know what? We checked it, and it's not true.
Yeah, and I mean, look, it had a connection to a very real tragic incident that did happen, and a shocking video. Again, I don't know why people take videos of horrific tragedies, personal tragedies, and then to attach to it this false story. It's just disgusting. Mm. But I believe efforts are being made for that by An Gard Síochána Síochána to have that video taken down from where it is on social media. I'm not going to point people to it, but I'm sure they might know what I'm referring to. That's the other thing. You kind of, whether you like it or not, you're subject to these rumors. They just get pushed in your face by the algorithm now. It scares me. I think what scares me is that even though you and I are going and checking these things out, as you say, and that's the job of a journalist, it scares me that more and more people are getting only getting their information from social media. And that's a scary reality that we're in, because more and more it's becoming separated from reality. Just speaking about that incident in Parnell Square, an individual went out and filmed themselves outside the hospital and declared with great confidence that the state was covering up the death of that child, and which was egregious and disgusting thing to say, and was completely untrue.
It was actually worse, because it was outside government buildings, and somebody said the way they portrayed themselves, as it was as if they were doing a news report. I don't know if they had a microphone or whatever, but it looked like a piece to camera. I thought it was very professionally done. Still
and
it up.
Had hundreds of thousands of views. Yeah, still up, yeah.
Yeah, and people were still saying to us, Michael, would you ever report the real facts that poor child is dead, and why are you covering this up? Mm-hmm. What can we do? We knew what the case was. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do? It's up to the parents, and you're right, fair play to the mother. Will we talk about the riots briefly?
Yeah.
So, obviously, there was significant millions of euro worth. I mean, we know that there was the Lewis set on fire, and that was destroyed. That was a 3.5 million euro damage to that alone, but there was significant damage all over Dublin. So there's a special incident room, a special unit at Store Street Garda Station in north central Dublin. That's the basis. That's the base for the investigation. Now, my understanding is they've got something like 20,000 hours of CCTV footage, and they're going through that. Now, there are about between 150 and 200 suspects that they're going after. Now, I had this out with somebody. I was going about the identified, and that person said, I'm going to quibble with identified. And in often though, there was a lot of those cases, more than half, maybe over 100, people have been nominated. In other words, that's Joe Bloggs, that's him, right? Because we did a story saying that people are being shopped by family members and friends who are horrified. So there is the Garda confidential line, but they are going through this. And Garda are looking at pictures and going, I remember that fella. So what they're doing is they're trying to build up a case against people who they believe it is, and trying to identify them. But just one very quick point. I think the ICCL did a piece about Garda cameras and what do you call it, facial recognition. And they brought up the whole thing about the riots and going, look, they were masked. And it sort of missed the point. The 20,000 hours of CCTV, it's not just from the riots, because people put on face masks during the riots, but then they took them off and went down the road. And so the Garda have a network, and there's a whole huge network of CCTV cameras, not just Garda ones, but private ones, business ones, all over Dublin. So you can pick somebody up and say, well, look, he's wearing yellow Nikes, and he's got the same runners, and he's got the same trousers, and he's got the same clothing. So that's that person. So then they can see him without the facial coverings on, and then they can identify that person. And that's what they're doing. So it's not just from the riots. It's before and after. And one thing they are considering doing is they're considering releasing images of some people that they have are satisfied themselves were involved in the riots but haven't identified them yet. So in other words, they're basically a rogues gallery of people that they want to identify. So that might happen sooner rather than later.
Oh, like on Crime Call?
Exactly. Exactamundo. So it'll be something like that.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, it's a huge investigation. And I remember Drew Harris saying, I think it was before one of the local policing committees, that this would be a huge investigation that could take a very long time. So he's trying to expedite that and have potentially help with the facial recognition stuff from potentially outside forces. So I don't know whether that's necessarily happening. Would we get confirmation of that?
It's all part of it. And also, you know, there are some very serious offences. I mentioned the Lewis tram. That I find it very hard to watch. That poor Garda sergeant who was assaulted. Did you watch that on O'Connell Bridge? Terrible to watch. But there are other. I mean, we know that didn't Garda have a toe amputated?
He had his toe amputated. Yeah, and out of work as a result of it.
And there were some really bad videos of Garda being chased and attacked. It was really, really bad to watch. So they're serious offences, indictable offences, you can call them. So it's 5 years in prison. So it's before a judge and jury. So the guards call it a charge sheet. So somebody was saying to me, there are going to be some very serious charge sheets coming down the road over this.
Yeah, and I mean, we could talk for another hour, but all of this began by, you know, the disinformation that spreads on social media caused a huge crowd to come into town at relatively short notice. I think we were seriously in a new war with social media. I think it can be used for good and for evil. I mean, I use X all the time, but I also can't stand it at times. But I mean, just the amount of people that came into town on short notice because of something that was sent to them on social media is scary.
Use Twitter. I use Twitter all the time. I love it. I have to say, I think it's fantastic, and it's been a great boon to journalists. And you do have to put up with an awful lot of crap, but it the positives. And I've made friendships on Twitter, and you know, when people whose views and opinions I value greatly. So it's wonderful. So I'll defend it. There are some bucketheads. Let them at it. You know what? Actually, that's one funny thing. Do you ever check your mentions?
Unfortunately,
I tend not to, and people go balubas when you don't answer them. I don't see it, so that's grand.
Well, we used to be able to have disagreements without people putting your photograph up and making allegations about you just because they disagree with you. I think we're living in a scary time. Again, I could go on about that, but I'm not going to go on about
it.
But maybe we should do another pod on misinformation.
Yeah.
All I would say to people is, you know, if you're not sure about something, just because you read it in a WhatsApp message, you know, check it and check it again. That's what we have to do as journalists. And we don't just put stuff out there willy-nilly. We do check it.
As someone who has been sued, I was involved in high court litigation. Happens, the jury decided, no problem at all, no problem with it whatsoever. It's an occupational hazard. I have seen more people threatening to sue over what is something that is said on Twitter. And let me tell you, for someone who has been there at the start all the way through, it's not a very nice experience. So I would urge people, just before you hit send, measure twice, cut once, and say, is this going to get me in the doo-doo? Because it is a far from pleasant experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and while I'm a big proponent of free speech, I do think that social media needs to be more properly monitored. I don't want to use the word policed, but I mean, we're speaking oftentimes in code and being very careful not to identify people for legal reasons. And then somebody can go on YouTube, for example, and make a video about someone that we cannot name.
No.
And it can get over 500,000 views and it goes completely unchecked. But if we even slipped up for 1 second and named that person, we'd be sued. So something has to be done.
Yeah, somebody was given out to me on Threads. My first, well, you know, maybe a wee bit sarky comment on Thread. I was talking about a certain criminal and he said, well, when you name this person, I'll have more, you can get more attention. And I said, no problem. You pay my legal bills and I'll do it, big lad. Not a problem. That's it.
This is it. We're held to a certain standard, and I think social media needs to be held to a standard if it's going to survive and if we're going to be able to get out of the cesspit that it currently is. So listen, on that chirpy note, we'll be back hopefully later in the week, if not next week. Pretty soon I am effing off for 3 wonderful weeks, but we will preload some pods for you, and Mick's going to maybe do some in my absence. We'll see what happens. So thanks as ever for listening.
Thanks very much. And I'll be on standby if anything major happens, but we should have a couple in the bag.